Hi, I'm Shane Bishop, Senior Pastor of Christ Church in Fairview Heights, Illinois. I am continuing our Next Year People series on hope. Today's topic, life storms. I'm ready to go. Let's get at it. I remember vividly the first time I heard this song. I was struck by its utter bleakness. It was the final episode of the 2017 The Voice competition. And in that final episode, they prayed all these popular artists out there to sort of chew up time until they can announce the winner. In sharp contrast to the glitzy, overproduced, and choreographed numbers that they were churning out that night, Chris Stapleton walks onto the stage with seemingly nothing but a guitar. There was no band. It was just a guy with a big hat and a big beard and a guitar. The song he played was riveting because it told the story of a marriage not yet ended, but beyond repair. It ended with the refrain, "You can go or you can stay. I won't love you either way." Stapleton sang about a life storm. Place we've all been, the shipwreck that happens long before the ship sinks to the bottom. I was struck at how well the lyrics of the song, and frankly, just the way the song was presented, captured the helplessness and despair and hopelessness that we have all felt at certain times in our lives. Some of you may be feeling that right now. Stapleton offered a harsh vocal reminder that not all storms blow over and not all stories end happily ever after. It's interesting to me that Stapleton also went out of his way to mention the fact that this couple attended church. They faked the perfect lives. I've seen that movie. I've been in that movie. Attending church is not a get out of pain free card. Never has been. Never will be. As he sang that night, I ran through my mind all of the marriages that I've encountered that simply could not be fixed. All the people I've prayed for to be healed, and healing did not come. All the situations in which I tried to help, but there was no relief. Take a listen to this song. Now that you're thoroughly depressed, let's get at this. This Next Year People series is designed to remind us that no matter how bad things are, no matter how bleak things are, no matter how unhelpful our belief systems may be, the human beings are still hardwired for hope. We are next year people, even in the storms. No, I'm going to say especially in the storms. I put life storms in two categories. There's stray arrow storms, things that just happen randomly, and they're self-generated storms, things that we contribute to greatly. Stray arrows fall into the stuff happens category. These are the steep tolls we pay simply because we drive the roads of a fallen world. People get sick. People die. People lose jobs. People have accidents. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Self-generated storms are of our own making. And they can come from many kinds of variables, but they're all rooted in sin, every single one of them. You see, people do dumb things. These are the storms that form in the gap between the people we were created to be and the people we actually are. The Bible calls that gap sin. Regardless of whether our storms or stray arrow or self-generated, storms play out roughly the same. They cause drama, They do damage, and they leave things different than they were before. The remarkable thing is that Jesus wants to be present in all of our storms. A lot of times we get it that he wants to be present in the stray arrow storms, but the fact he wants to be present in the self-generated storms as well is utterly astounding. Jesus wants to be present in your storm. Just like this storm that happened on the Sea of Galilee. Verse 35. Jesus said, "Let's cross the lake." The Sea of Galilee is not really a sea at all. It's a freshwater lake that sets 700 feet below sea level. It's the lowest freshwater lake in the world. In Jesus' day, it was crowded with commercial fishing boats who supplied Rome's insatiable appetite for the kind of tilapia that they catch there that we call today St. Peter's fish. They would catch them, they would put them in big salted barrels, and they'd ship them all over the empire. Business was booming on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus had been teaching on the shores, and he needed a break. I get that. When you do four sermons every Sunday, and you do a couple of meetings, by the time the day gets almost over, I get where Jesus was at. You've given everything you have to give. You're depleted. So he said to his disciples, "Take me to the other side of the lake." So Jesus climbed into a boat, and off they went. Of course, I always wonder what kind of boat. In 1986, two fishermen were on the northwest waters of the Sea of Galilee in a time of drought. What they saw protruding from the mud turned out to be a first century fishing boat. Exactly the style of boat that would have carried Jesus, that would have populated the waters in that century. This particular wooden boat was in service for about 100 years. And the parts of the boat were constantly being repaired and replaced. You might think of it like a bus today, a commercial bus that they just keep on the road for 500,000 miles. But by the time that bus is retired, it probably has very few of its original parts. In fact, the whole of this boat has traces of 12 types of wood from decades of repairs. The boat itself is just less than 27 feet long, 7.5 feet wide. It had a shallow bottom and could be sailed using a single mast or four rowing oarsmen. It required a crew of five. Now, judging from the size of first century skeletons that they have found in Galilee, the average male at the time of Jesus would have been about 5'5 and weighed roughly 140 pounds. Such a boat could transport 15 men of that size. We know this boat carried 13, Jesus and his 12 disciples. It would also provide enough room for Jesus to lie down, and that is what happened. So now that we have an idea about the boat and the crew, let's look at the action sequence. Verse 36, so the disciples did what Jesus said. The first thing you need to understand here is the disciples were in the will of God. We have this idea that if we are in the will of God, nothing bad is ever going to happen to us. Wrong. Wrong. The disciples are being obedient to Jesus. They are right where they are supposed to be. They are firmly in the will of God. So we know that whatever transpires here, whatever happens here, it's not a self-generated storm. There's nothing self-inflicted that's going to happen here. Verse 37, a storm came and threatened to capsize the boat. You got to remember, this thing's almost 10 yards long, 7 feet wide. This is a pretty good sized boat. It must have been a pretty bad storm. To the west, north, and east, the Sea of Galilee is surrounded by mountains that are between 3,000 to 4,000 feet above sea level. And like all mountains, they produce cooler temperatures in their higher elevations. Of an evening, when the warm air of the Sea of Galilee rises, it collides with cooler mountain air. And turbulence can form. and the wind is compressed through those mountain passages, and it sort of just squirts through like a person with their thumb on a water hose. Storms can hit quick on the Sea of Galilee, and they can be quite violent. They can create gusts, which cause waves to get really high, and it can happen like this. Those of you that are fishermen who've ever fished a big lake or certain lakes, you know how quickly a storm can come upon you. Now, the two Greek words that are used here describe the intensity of the storm. One is seismos. It's the word for an earthquake. And the other one means that the waves towered over them. This is a bad storm. And it brings us to a profound and simple truth that I want to use to dispel a popular myth. The myth says that if we're in God's will, nothing bad will ever happen to us. And if it does happen to us, then in some way God has let us down. I hear it over and over again. Somebody says, I've been in church, I've been leading, I've been tithing, I've been trying to live a good life, and now stuff has gone wrong. God has let me down. My friends, that is an absolutely inaccurate conclusion. The Bible never makes such promises. The Bible never makes such claims. Never. And rather, it's quite the opposite. Jesus said that there will be storms. Listen to this story from Matthew 7, 24 through 27. Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds their house on the solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the waves beat against that house, it will not collapse because it's built on bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rain and the floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash. The story of the house built on sand and the house built on rock is one of the featured Jesus stories that we have in the Gospels. Now, obviously, the big theme is that if you build your house on Christ, if you listen to what Christ says and do what he says, you've built on the rock, and when the storm comes, your house will hold. Conversely, in that big theme, if you build on sand or if you build on lesser things, if you listen to Jesus but don't do what he says, then you build on sand. That's the big theme. We all get that. But let me suggest a sub-theme. No matter where you build your house, whether rock or sand, storms still come. Building on the rock did not make that house storm-proof. The storm still came. It was just as violent. It was just as ferocious. It was just as dangerous. Storms come no matter where you build your house. Verse 38, Jesus was asleep in the back of the boat, and the disciples said, "Don't you care that we're about to drown?" These are words of panic and desperation. And in their panic and desperation, they deliver an insult to Jesus. What they're really saying is, don't you care about us? Do you not care at all about us? We're going through a storm and you are sleeping right through it. They're actually questioning Jesus' disposition toward them. I bet it's something that you've done as well. You know, you're trying to do the right thing. Things are going bad. Everything's kind of blowing up. And we say, Jesus, do you even care about me? God, do you even know that I'm here? Do you even care about me? That's what the disciples are doing in their panic and desperation. Verse 39, Jesus awakened and said to the waves, "Peace, be still." And there was a great calm. In this rebuke of the wind and the waves, Jesus is evoking the presence of God into two storms. First of all, you have the storm that's happening on the Sea of Galilee. And second of all, you have a storm that is happening in the hearts of all 12 disciples. There are two storms going on. Jesus speaks one word to quiet both of them. The external atmospheric conditions are quieted. And the internal fear of the disciples is quieted as well. Jesus rebuked both storms. And both storms quieted. And now Jesus offers what I would call a teaching moment. Or a come to Jesus moment. Verse 40 and 41. Then Jesus asked, "Why were you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Jesus is in awe that the disciples still have no faith. Conversely, the disciples were in awe. Who's this man that he speaks and even the waves obey him? Asking Jesus to intervene was appropriate. That's not the problem. It was the disciples' failure to control their impulses that frustrated Jesus. Jesus says to them, "After all you've seen me do, you still think I don't care about you? Unbelievable. Unbelievable." I bet the disciples were embarrassed that they had acted in fear and not in faith. You see, my friends, the human soul cannot hold both fear and faith. They are mutually exclusive realms of existence. The more you have of one, the less you're going to have of the other. Fear, worry, and anxiety are more than predictable human responses to life storms. They are first and foremost indicators of a faithless life. We don't have faith, so we succumb to fear. How many times do we panic? How many times do we say, "Jesus, do you even care about me?" Only to hear Jesus say, "After all I have done for you, you still don't think I care? Unbelievable." Storms change things. The disciples were changed after this storm. Storms cause fear. They leave devastation in their wake. Violent storms can change everything from coastlines to mountain faces. And we've all been through life storms. And some of us have even been through life hurricanes. Death, disease, divorce. Prodigal sons, prodigal daughters. The loss of a job. Business failure. Bankruptcy. Addictions. Estranged friends and families. Shattered dreams all represent life storms that change landscapes. The storm comes, and the one thing you know, the only thing you know, is that things will never be the same again. The question becomes, do they change things for the better, or do they change things for the worse? And I want to suggest to you that that is completely up to you. Completely up to you. We can spend our lives lamenting the storm, or we can start picking up the debris and build something new. Perhaps something beautiful and wonderful. We can choose to be bitter. We can leave a legacy of pain and defeat. Or we can choose to rebuild our lives with what we have and leave a legacy of belief and hope. I noticed a long time ago that upbeat and happy and functional people don't have any fewer storms than anyone else. In fact, you will often find they've had a lot more storms than everyone else. They just make better decisions in its aftermath. They choose to rebuild. Next year, people of hope live differently than people whose hope has been robbed from them. They live with an end game in mind. And as a result, they do not succumb to despair. They are not reckless or self-destructive or hell-bent. They don't just react to every stressor like an untied balloon that you just let go and flies everywhere. They choose not to live their lives in 24/7, 365 chaos and drama. They make a different set of choices. I'd like to close by offering a process that applies to absolutely everything when it comes to how next year people of hope, respond to storms. If you're taking some notes Now's when you do it. Here's how next year people encounter storms. Number one, when the storm comes, you just have to stop. Just stop. So often we speed up when we're lost. You just need to stop. It's an incredible life skill. Something bad has happened. You see the storm upon you. Just pull over and stop. Number two, control your impulses. Control your impulses. Don't speak or tweet or post. It's going to make things worse every single time. I know a lot of people who've gotten into life storms that really weren't that bad, but because they couldn't control their impulses, things were 20 times worse than they should have been. Control your impulses. Stop and then get control of yourself. Get control of your mind. Get control of your heart. Get control of your emotions. Take thou authority over yourself. Number three, think. Think carefully through the situation. Consider the alternatives. I used a simple example last week. When I was in Israel, they misplaced my bag. I wouldn't know if that bag was permanently lost or found for about 12 hours. And so when I stopped and I controlled my impulses and I thought about things, something occurred to me. I can have a great day and not have my bag, or I can have a terrible day and not have my bag. I can help others have a wonderful trip in Israel today and not have my bag. Or I can sit and feel sorry for myself and make everyone miserable and not have my bag. I made a conscious choice. I'm going to have a great day. I'm going to help other people. They'll either find my bag or it won't. That's what happens when you think. Number four, you choose. You choose a helpful course of action. I laid things out. I chose to be happy. I chose to be functional. I chose to have a great day. I chose to add value to the day of others. And then number five, you act. You just execute your plan. I told the story a few times last week, and apparently in some of the services I forgot to mention, they did find my bag. That was great. But I can tell you this, I'd already decided even if they didn't, I was still going to have a great trip. I want to close with one of my favorite stories. It's a story that moves me every time I share it. In 1633, the Dutch master Rembrandt painted a 5 feet by 4 feet work that he called Storm on the Sea of Galilee. It was done in oils on a huge canvas, and it depicts our text today. It was Rembrandt's only seascape. There's a little bit of drama around it because it was stolen from a gallery in Boston, and frankly, no one knows where it is right now. But the painting depicts Jesus and the 12 disciples in the storm that we've just read about on the Sea of Galilee. But if you do a careful count of the people on the boat, you will discover that there are 14 people on the boat, not 13. You should have the 12 disciples and Jesus, 13. There are 14 people on the boat. Upon inspection, it becomes really clear that Rembrandt did a self-portrait, if you will. He painted himself in the boat. If you look at this relief, he is looking right at us. Rembrandt placed himself in the boat that is encapsulated in the storm. And I want to suggest to you, we need to do the same. When life storms come, we need to make a choice to put ourselves in the Jesus boat. When things are going really, really badly, we need to make a choice to put ourselves in the Jesus boat, because the storm's going to come whether we're in that boat or not. So I'm going to tell you right now, you best be in that boat. If there's a storm, I want to be where Jesus is. If the storm is unavoidable, I want to be where Jesus is. If there is a storm that is possibly going to do great damage, I want to be where Jesus is. And my friends, it's just a matter of placing ourselves there. We have to paint ourselves into the boat. painting ourselves into that boat serves as a constant reminder that Jesus has even the raging storm you are facing right now under his control. Can you imagine right now that Jesus is saying to your health situation, to your relational situation, to your financial situation, to your work situation, can you imagine right now Jesus is saying, peace, be still? And even as he invokes the presence of God, not only does the storm begin to subside on the exterior, but I want you to feel the storm beginning to subside on your interior. You see, anytime we begin to panic, there are always two storms going on, the one on the outside and the one on the inside. Let Jesus speak the name of Jesus into both storms. You say, well, Pastor, you don't know how bad the storm is. I don't know how bad the storm is, but I know how good Jesus is. And I know Jesus has everything under control. And the cleanup from your storm, Jesus says that under control as well. And the rebuilding process that will come after, Jesus has that under control as well. And if it kills us, and some storms do, Jesus has that under control as well. And because we know that, we can sit in the boat and hold hope high, even when everyone around us is panicking. And that becomes our greatest witness as people of faith. How? Why? Why can we hold steady in the storm? Because Christ is with us, and he will never leave us. And he will never forsake us. Remember the stuff at the first of the sermon that I told you Jesus didn't promise? I just told you what he did promise. His presence. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. He will never run out on us. He has us in this world, and he will carry us into the next. We're next year, people. Wait and see. We're next year, people, you and me. Let's go out from this place today and live like it, because people who have hope live their lives completely differently than those who have none at all. And our hope is in Christ and Christ alone. Would you pray with me? Thank you, dear God, that no matter what is going on in our lives, that you have us. Thank you that all along the continuum of the storm, you have us. Thank you that even when our time in this world is over, that you have us. And thank you that because your grip on us is so strong, we do not have to be afraid. We do not have to live in fear. Even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil because you've got us. Dear God, I just speak peace into every storm faced by anyone in the sound of my voice. Those at Fairview Heights, those at our campuses, those who are online, those who are worshiping on Facebook Live, I just speak the presence of Christ into every storm that's faced by anyone who's hearing me. And I pray that that presence of Christ, that peace, would not only calm the storm, but I pray it would calm the person as well. May your presence, dear God, invade our space, invade our drama, invade our storms, and we will praise you forever, for you are faithful. And we pray it in Jesus' strong name. Amen.